Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Hello!
Oh, hi, Jenny. That's weird. I think we're at the wrong podcast stop, but
we do not belong here.
We don't. This is not our podcast, but we are actually here up at the front, all four of us. We are here, Jenny, myself, Morgan, and LaToya, with a brief message. As I'm sure most of you who are listening to this podcast already know, there's a super big and very important conversation happening surrounding the toxic environments created by Joss Whedon on the sets of Buffy and Angel, and other places. This is far from the first time that we have had and heard conversations about Joss's actions, most recently and notably from Ray Fisher on the set of Justice League.
First and foremost, we want to say that we stand with Ray Fisher, Charisma Carpenter, Michelle Trachtenberg, Amber Benson, and everyone else who is speaking their truth. We know that while much of this sadly doesn't come as a surprise to those in the Buffy, Angel, and Marvel verses, the specifics and details shared by Charisma are new, and the chorus of voices has gotten larger. We want you to know that we will continue to be here to do our best in processing this all together, something that we have been doing since nearly the start of this podcast.
Yes, we're very thankful, again, a thing that you likely know, to have this community, to keep having these conversations, and we very much believe that these universes are created by a lot more than one person.
Also, it's important to let you know that this episode of Angel on Top was recorded before Charisma's statement came out. So LaToya and I might have discussed this episode slightly differently, given that it's about Darla and her pregnancy and Cordelia's support of her in solidarity, given her own experiences both as a woman and as a, you know, person that's been pregnant before through supernatural means. And we just want you to know that we're listening and we care, and that Joss's behavior is unacceptable.
And just one final note. Fuck Joss Whedon!
Ooh.
Yay, yay!
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the Cordelia Chase of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. Bones, a.k.a. one half of the Gun Squad, a.k.a. Theodore K. Mullins.
And I am your other co-host, Morgan Ludich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Buffering Universe, a.k.a. also Bones, a.k.a. the other half of the Gun Squad, a.k.a. Frank Skabopoulos. Welcome to the show!
And this week, we're watching Angel Season 3, Episode 7, Offspring. Offspring was written by David Greenwalt and directed by Thierry Meyer. It aired on the WB on November 5th, 2001. This is the one where, after a few episodes of Darla tags, Angel's baby mama finally arrives in town. Morgan, did you like the episode?
I did. Yeah, this is a good one.
It is a good one. And because I know that you are technically, so you're obviously following along with season three to host this, mm-hmm. but also you are catching up and you're in season two right now. And I was like, does this episode kind of make you want to just like go ahead? Because I know I kind of want to just go like full steam ahead with the rest of the season after this episode.
Yes, it was hard to be like, okay, I can't keep watching, but also keeping the two continuities together in my mind like helps, because I am also so hooked on where I am in season two of Angel right now. Like where I am in my, you know, current rewatch of the full series, Darla has just been turned into a vampire by Drusilla. So I'm you know, screaming, I'm climbing up the walls, I'm going absolutely mad, along with my viewing partner, Michael Jason. So it's that's the thing that's keeping me, and also recording the show with you.
You're basically catching up to the reason why Angel's in this predicament. And you said that before the recording that you had no memory of the character Holtz from your initial watching of the series.
I like have the vaguest. I'm like, oh right, there's a dude, and he's from the past. Like I believe I forgot that he comes back in present day. I've not a lot of memories there. No thoughts, head empty.
Just for anyone who wants to be a nerd, we first saw Holt in a flashback in the season 3 premiere, Heartthrob. He was chasing after Angelus and Darla, and then James and Elizabeth were also in tow at that time. James is the reason why they got caught again, basically, while the girls were away. And we also know from the trial, which is an episode you recently just watched in season 2, mm-hmm. That Angelus and Darla were running away from Holt, and then Darla, that's where she abandons him. So yes. that's what we know. They killed his family and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Whoops.
A little whoopsie, and he's chased them all around the world. They went to Africa.
This guy took it real personal. You slaughter his family, and he just like will not let it go.
Everyone in the vamp crew, in Angelus fashion, they do something dumb, and it all comes back to blow back on Angel, because Darla decides that they should let Holtz live because it's fun to torture him. And because of that, this man can come to the future.
Honestly, so messy and iconic of her, though. Like, I love it. I love Darla. What a hot bitch. I don't know how else to say it. She's hot and she's a bitch. And I mean that in a positive way. And I mean that in a negative way. And I mean that every way you can think of. I'm in awe of her.
She is one to be in awe of. Mm-hmm. A couple more notes before we get into the episode, really. Something I always note, as you know, I am an expert on the WB's image campaigns. Mm-hmm. Just to show you how awesome Julie Benz is, and I think we all agree here. Mm-hmm. She was like, this obviously aired 2001. She was part of like the WB image campaign for 2001, despite not being a series regular.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, I wanted to show you that before, but I could just show you that after we're done recording, because yeah, she's just there.
Rules.
She's there with David and Cordy, I'm sorry, and Charisma, I mean, and Tom Welling and Kristen Kreuk.
Ooh.
Joshua Jackson, Eden's crush.
2001 WB. Pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff.
And then just the last bit of business before we get into the episode. This episode is titled Offspring. I was thinking, should I sing some songs by the Offspring in this episode? I will not, but I will. Based on the Offspring songs I know, I will adjust lyrics/titles to make it applicable to this episode of television. So please bear with, as I say, and all the girlies say, Angel's pretty fly for a dead white guy. Cordy, are you doing okay? You're going to go far, Angel and Darla's kid. Got to keep them separated. Is Fred and Wesley. And come out and play, gun. Or gun out and play. Okay, I'm done.
Congratulations on all of those.
Previously on Angel. The host reads their souls. You see Angel rudely kicking Darla out after sex. Very rude.
Rude.
You have a shaman telling Darla that this baby is not meant to be known. And then she's like, time to go visit daddy. And this is where I can say that, unfortunately, the previouslys are not on Hulu. We need to reclaim previously and opening credits culture. This is offensive.
So, like, honestly, such an important part of all this shit. Like, even if there was like a skip the previouslys button, like there is like on Netflix, like that, I would love to have the option. And I definitely need it for like every Bravo show when they go back into the mythology, because I have no idea what's happening. Everyone's faces blend.
And also all of their faces have been changed over the years.
Yeah, I need to remember what kind of face shape someone had when an event took place, as opposed to what face shape it is now.
Exactly. Rome, 1771.
Dun, dun, dun.
We're in a sewer in the past and it still looks cool. Angel stays having the coolest sewer sets and I love them.
Mm-hmm.
Fred was right. They all look cozy. Let's move to the sewers.
This sewer had a lot of like water and rats and cobwebs. It looked less cozy. And I was like, I was like, what kind of iteration of Angel are we dealing with here? Because he looks way less comfortable in this sewer than I know my boy to be.
We've still got some time before he is, hanging around with the rats, his best friends, which I noticed because when I was like doing all the chronology, basically, that's one of the cool things and reasons you do an Angel spinoff, because basically when Drusilla and Spike came into the picture for Darling Angel, they'd already had like 100 years under their belt. So like, this show is accounting for like those 100 years basically with its flashbacks, because all you really see in Buffy is Darla turning Angel, and then we fast forward to them being with Drusilla and then with Spike, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, no, it's nice to get like all of that cleared up and to have a sense of like what it all looks like. I would love to see a linear timeline of everything, which I'm sure exists.
It does,
thanks to nerds.
It's a long one because it also like includes comic canon too.
Oh shit. Well, that's going to be a lot of stuff then.
And yeah, because usually when you see a frantic flashback Angel like this, you think he is insulted. But nope, this is Angelus looking not so cool, baby.
Not so fly for a dead white guy.
Yeah, dudes are chasing him with torches and crossbows, so they know what he is.
Mm-hmm.
Enter Holtz with his cool 1771 sunglasses.
Cool being a relative term here.
I mean, they're cool for 1771.
Hell yeah.
They were on the like the cusp. This was brand new technology.
You're right. I shouldn't judge.
We're getting some revenge because, killed his family. So
this guy has no chill. Like, he cannot hang. And I've yet to find anything that like exciting or redeeming about him to latch on to. How do you feel about this character? Because so far I've found him like a little like generic guy who doesn't like Angel. Like, of course, killing a family is wrong, but
Jesus, Morgan, no sympathy from Morgan Ludich.
Look, it happened. No, it's not that I don't have sympathy. It's just I'm looking for something like specific or interesting about him, because Angel killed a lot of people's families, I'm sure, but this guy just has the unbeatable spirit and desire to keep seeking vengeance. But I've been waiting for something about him to kind of stick for me.
I will just say, well, it seems like he'll be around, so maybe we'll get more information about why he's not just getting over the death of his family.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Angelus, who, we saw run away, he's back to cracking jokes, talking about Holtz's wife being a hearty screamer.
Ugh.
You know what? I think possibly, has his accent gotten better? It's still not good, but has it gotten better?
I think maybe a smidge better, yeah. And I think also he's like downplaying it a little more, like he's throwing it away a little more, and it's gotten a little better, which is a good combination.
Got torture o'clock happening, because
mm-hmm.
It seems he wants to know where Darla is, basically. And well, here she is to save the day. She brought some fodder. She brought some vampire fodder to save the day.
Sorry it took me so long, darling. Kill them.
Yes, I love her girl gang, and I love their flaming arrows. That rules. I wish I could roll in that, like, dope girl gang. Except for the whole not having a soul thing and killing people, which I am against. But the aesthetic, I do love.
Well, once you join the girl gang, you wouldn't care about not having a soul and killing people. So there you go.
Fair enough.
But yeah, there is one thing that I noted when Holt is doing the torture. He says, Angelus, you're a demon. It is your nature to maim and kill, but you were also once a man. If we beat and burn the demon out of your living flesh, will there be anything left? Anything at all? I doubt it, but I'm willing to spend the next fortnight of my life finding out. In either event, you have no soul. You cannot be saved. I wrote in my notes, basically, put all of that in your Shanshu prophecies, because that is a lot of, what we talk about with Angel in general. Now he has a soul. Mm-hmm. And his old question is, can I be saved? Am I a righteous man? You know, the immense speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say he's a righteous man. What do you think?
I would say he is trying very hard to be a righteous man, which makes him one. Like, I believe, like Buffy, that like trying is hard and it is every day. And it is the idea that like, as long as he's putting forth the effort and cares and is willing to question himself and willing to look deep within and try to always do right, that he is doing a good job. And I'm pro Angel. I think he's a good guy. 10 out of 10.
Your first, Morgan is pro Angel on this podcast. And you know, Holt's asking, if we beat and burn the demon out of your living flesh, will there be anything left? Well, unfortunately for you, Holt, like the Romani, like they found out in 1898. It's like they, you know, they beat the demon out of him and they gave him his soul. And he basically was, they were trying to make him sink. He was living in the sewers, eating those rats, his favorite pastime.
Yum, yum. It worked for a while, like for quite a long time. He was a defeated husk of a person.
I was just going to say husk. But yeah, like I said, Darla rubs it in. They basically fuck in the back of a carriage and leave Holt alive, which shouldn't have left him alive, girl.
Dumb, but very hot of them. like many things they do. Dumb, but hot.
Dumb, but hot. Mm-hmm. Then L.A., present day. Darla has taken a bus. She chomped on a couple of people on the bus, which is apparently a code 12.
Mm, yeah, when someone eats a whole bus, that's a code 12, I guess.
We have our codes for everything in LA.
But very spooky stuff. And she makes, doesn't she make some joke about like LA transportation? Which I would just like to say, LA public transportation is not as bad as it gets a rap for. I would give anything to be on an LA subway right now and for it to be safe. But then we cut to our theme, right?
We do. I'm not singing. Cordy is putting fake flowers in the basement to brighten it up. And it's really cute and sweet. And Angel says, I've never known anyone like you. And I write "aw" in all caps in my notes.
Yeah, geez. He is making heart eyes at her here. Like, yeah, he is all about Cordy. And it is very cute.
And here he's teaching her how to not pull her punches and kicks. And she gives him a big old punch.
Oh my God, this was so cute. I did not know how to handle it. And when he is like, you can't hurt me, I'm a vampire. And then he looks away and is like, ow, and is like straightening his jaw out. I was like, that is my girl. And that is my boy. I was very into it. And it was nice to see them in such a light, like really like romantic and bubbly scene. But if you know what show you're watching, you know that means something awful is about to happen.
So much sweetness up top. Cordy says that Angel's offer is game because apparently there's a prophecy that Wesley and Gunnar are trying to get right now that might suggest that the end is near. And, you know, Angel's like, there's always some ancient scroll, which is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's seen three in his very long life. Cordy guessed four.
I love that joke, by the way. I enjoyed all the prophecy translations in this episode. I like the nerd shit.
So many, but it gets frustrating, and it will continue to be frustrating. So
I like the commitment to the like academic nature of everything, and the idea that like Wesley really does have to do like a lot of hard translating work. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that the show is all in on that and is not going to shortcut it. I enjoy that.
The Niasian scroll is what they're looking for. Also, Angel is possibly swelling.
So then we go with Gunn and Wes to their little heist, correct?
Yes, the little B&E. Wes has his B&E kit.
I love one idiot. He's so, like, you know, we see Wes. He seems like he's back to essentially being his old self after the events of Billy. Like, they are very fine playing the character for comedy again.
Well, it's at first it seems like he is back to his old self, but he's not back to his old self.
Oh yeah, he ends up like showing some side effects, especially like around Fred, but like he is fumbling and bumbling. And Gunn always,
he has like a glass cutter he's setting up when Gunn walks in.
The suction cup, like when he can't get the suction cup off the window, and that's kind of like the button of the scene. So good. What a like a Pink Panther ass goofy boy, and I love him.
It's such a goof. But yeah, they're looking for the scroll. They're going through this mystical vault, which has a bunch of stuff. And then here comes a dude with a large revolver. Yeah, I hate when that happens.
Always happening to me when I'm doing my cool heists.
Yeah, Wesley's like, you can't call the cops because we'll tell them about all the GHB, which he doesn't have, but apparently there's a mystical thing that is very similar to GHB, and for some reason Wesley knows that.
That, I was just like, wow, you are really up on your shit. Like, I was very impressed by how quickly he was able to work on his feet there. But yeah, I guess that works, and the guy is freaked out, and then Gunn does a little bit of juggling.
It's hot. I'm just going to say it.
It is, because it's done with such confidence. And I am just so proud of Gunn. And he does, not only does he juggle, but he appears to drop one and then does a hacky sack trick. Like he's Freddie Prinze Jr. and She's All That. And he can't let it slip.
Never let it drop.
Amazing. I lost my mind, and he lets one shatter to intimidate this guy, and they end up getting to take the scroll, which,
yeah, cool, he's like, we're not thieves, we're investigators, they just want to borrow it. They'll probably end up destroying it, because that's usually what happens. They're not good at taking care of things.
No. But I think it's for the greater good that they have it still.
Yeah, this dude doesn't need it. He's clearly just a collector of things. He doesn't need this.
Yeah, he's got enough of his weird GHB and tiny glass magic balls.
You know what every warlock needs. Fred walks in on Angel and Cordy training, which they do a little bit where it seems like there's sexy bending happening.
Oh my god, very down with love of them to do this wordplay. But it's and Fred being like, she's so cute, I can't handle her. And this is when Cordy also reveals that even though she has kind of like, you know, punched Angel in the face and made him feel awful, she also is like so sore and in pain from all of the training, and I adore her. Good
Hard
for you,
work,
girl.
Baby. Fred says the word chirumption,
which is the like one of the only Pylian words she remembers that's nice.
What's it mean?
It's when two great heroes meet in a field of battle and recognize their mutual fate.
And when she sees Angel and Cordy sparring, that's what comes to mind. She calls Cordy a hero with the visions and the courage, and it's really sweet.
It's so lovely to see Cordelia through Fred's eyes. Like, I mean, just by nature of, like, having more than one woman on your show. Like, I mean, you know, there are other women on Angel, but they haven't been on Team Angel. So the idea that, like, there's another girl around who can just, like, appreciate how wonderful Cordelia is and how strong and resilient she is and, you know, find her own strength in a completely different avenue. Like, I mean, that's why you should always have more than one woman, more than one person of color, more than one queer character, all of these things so that you can have people admire their strengths and, like, weaknesses and differences and stuff like that. Because it's so... It feels so much more like lived in and wonderful to see Fred in awe of Cordelia than it does, I think, for the boys sometimes.
Sorry, boys.
Get out of here, boys.
But it's also different with the boys, too, just because they've like known her longer. So it's like a different kind of, they're like, basically, Fred's only seen her as a hero, kind of fully formed, whereas for them, they're like seeing her, they've seen her grow over the years, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. They have this perspective on, you know, where she started, whereas for Fred, she's only been like the vision girl who's like, you know, completely self-assured. And that rules, because I like people seeing Cordy as just exciting as she is. So,
yeah.
My girls.
She says because of this, it's only natural that Angel and Cordy would be drawn to each other. And then Angel starts being weird. Fred gets distracted by plastic flowers, which are her favorite. Because Fred, they never fade.
That's so, like, I love math because it's the same in every country. Like, Fred, can you ever tell us a happy thing without it immediately becoming sad?
And then, yeah, Angel's like, nothing between us. And she's like, nothing but Moira.
Mm.
Who's Moira? And I just want to say, baby.
It's where is Bebe's chamber?
But yes, Moira is the gut physical attraction between two larger than life souls. And then Angel gets like really like, oh no. He yells at her to stop saying that word, the mm-hmm. Kyrumption. And that's when Wes comes in. And this is when we get very upset because he's like, I believe Fred's been through enough without people shouting at her. Oh.
And it's something very much, you know, like with his heart in the right place. And like, obviously, Angel didn't scare Fred or anything. But like, the idea that Wes is still so sensitive to that and still like hurting and dealing with so much guilt is a real bummer. Like, I mean, I think it proves that he's a good person who really tried to like take this experience and not like swipe it under the carpet and to like think about the way he treats women and to think about whatever he has internally, you know, whatever the spark it was that like Billy's magic set aflame, wherever that comes from, and, you know, deal with it. But ow, it hurt me to see for sure.
Yeah. And like when she just says, you know, you didn't mean anything by it, like just Wesley still, he's not well.
Yeah, he's not. He's still hurting from this. Yeah.
And then he asks Angel, who gave you all the flowers? Nobody. Dork.
I love their goofy boy energy together. Like, nothing makes me happier than like Wes and Angel talking about things that aren't magic. Like, their friendship is so silly to me. Like, they're like their friendship separate from working because they're both just like, I mean, honestly, just such dumb boys. Like, that Angel has this like kind of like sweet broody himbo energy, and that Wes is just an absolute dork. They're, the middle of their Venn diagram is so well-meaning and sweet. I always enjoy whenever they just get to chat.
It's nice. Really, so cool. Gunn, Wes, and Fred are working on the scrolls, and Angel's creeping on Cordy, as I have in my notes.
Yeah, he's like clearly having this like, wait, do I like her? Like, moment of like, are we in love? Which I'm like, how are you this oblivious if this has like never crossed your mind before, you dummy?
You know, he's focused on work all the time. He's such a doofus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fred's doing calculations and the world possibly ended last March. Yeah, this is where we learn that the Skrulls project the arrival of the arising of the Troclon, a personal being that brings about the ruination of mankind. Sounds great.
Yeah, just another day at the office for our gang.
And yes, ruination could also mean purification.
Yeah, so like it's another tricky word, much like Shanshu, which, you know, ended up meaning to live and to die. And this one seems to mean quite a few possible.
Cordy brings up that mistake and she actually kind of is mean about it.
She is like, he tries really hard. I think it's very clear that this isn't easy.
At first it seems like she's joking, but then like her reaction, the scene continues, like she might actually be mad at him about like fucking up.
Yeah, which seems to come from at least I seem to sense that it came from this like protecting Angel space of like, you know, he thought he was gonna die and that's like fucked up and you messed up. Like, Angel and Cordy are in this moment like so protective of each other. Darla shows up at a moment where the two of them are finally like, they're finally so close that they're starting to notice they're close. Like, and it's an interesting kind of like shading in their dynamic. And I really like it because it is, I mean, when you fall for someone who is initially your friend, there is that weird middle period of like, oh, okay, is this like the platonic love I hold for my friend or is this something else? And like, what does that feel like? And the idea that that is the exact moment that Darla shows up pregnant. Yikes.
Classic Buffyverse. And yeah. So they explain what the Shanshu prophecy is to Fred because, you know, she still has some things she needs to learn about what's going on in this world. But while Angel's listening, you know, Cordy's saying what she would do if Angel, you know, became human. She's like, get him some plant, take him to the beach because the boy needs some color. To which he doesn't even say anything, but like he gets like that shallow angel face. Is like basically he's thinking she thinks I'm pale.
But whereas all I'm thinking is Cordy wants a beach day. Like, I love the idea. And I love the idea that she's immediately just like, yeah, I'd be there with him and I'd help him explore the like new world of like being able to be in the sun. And I'd want to help him be a normal guy and I'd want to be a part of everything. Like, that is, again, such a clear, such a, like, it's so clear that she loves him. Like, and however you want to define that love is, you know, up to you. But it's so clear that she just sees them as people who are always going to be in each other's lives. And I love that. Like, our gang's a little family, and it makes me happy.
You love a found family.
God, I really do.
Fred does more calculations, and the Troclon should be in L.A. right about now. But right now, Angel has to give an awkward speech to Cordelia about being a manpire.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about things. People. You know, how they relate. Take you and me, for instance. And we're very different. Very different. Obviously, human, vampire, woman, man, pyre.
Has someone been putting vodka in your blood?
You're funny.
Maybe Angel needs to like write down what he's going to say before he says it.
Because technically the last time he wrote something down, it was his apology to Merle. And that was something that clearly Cordelia wrote for him.
Yes.
So I don't know if he knows how to write, honestly. We know he knows how to draw. Does he know how to write?
Well, I mean, writing is just the drawing of words.
We know he knows how to read because he does that in the dark all the time.
Then he knows how to write.
I want to see it. But yeah, Cordy's like, Angel, are you trying to say you love me? And he's like, what? I love you too. And then she like tells everyone that Angel said Angel loves me and I love him. We love you, Angel.
The audio of everyone being like, we love you. I replayed it like three times. Oh my God. Again, like, you and I love New Girl. You and I love like sitcoms. And I believe we share the enjoyment of a found family group. And
we do.
Dang, these dummies love each other. And I basked in that. That is, you know, this show doesn't always get to dwell on the fun and the love because, you know, we're doing the dark and the, you know, magical pregnancy of it all and the, you know, broody quest for redemption. But when they love each other, I just am the happiest person on the planet. And this was so dang cute.
You guys love us, and we love you.
We love you, Angel.
They were all saying it earlier.
And, you know, she's like, the good I've seen out far outweighs the bad. And he says, you know, right back at you, basically. And it's so sweet, and they're cute. And then here comes Darla, baby.
Ooh. Hello, the worst, lover. Long time no
the
see.
The worst possible time.
Truly, these two people are being like, wow, so we love each other. We have bonds of mutual respect and we're both hot as hell. What does that all add up to? I'm no Fred with my math skills, but I would say it's that they should bone. And then Darla.
Darla's here to show you what happens when you bone, Angel.
Again, this show hates sex. Like, I to quote Liz Lemon, sex makes the people go away. Like, it is. Angel can't fuck or else something awful happens. And that is his like forced celibacy is strange. And I think we should talk about it every once in a while because it is weird.
Thank you, Morgan.
But that said, like, this is when Fred's like, who is this? And Gunn reveals that they keep a chart of...
Do you think Gunn made the chart after last season?
I feel like it was a team effort. Like, I feel like it was kind of like someone had a misunderstanding. And then Gunn was like, what if this was all written down? And Wesley was like, well, if we were going to do that, we obviously have to do it right. And there has to be kind of like a system to how it's laid out. And Cordy's like, well, okay, if it's going to fit in the files, then it should be like this. And then I have a feeling that it became a group project and that everybody got involved. And that once they asked Angel for some details for the chart, and he almost found out about the chart, and it got very awkward for a while, and they had to hide the chart. And now it just exists in the files. That's my personal belief. How do you feel?
We do know that they like hearing his stories of back in the day, like when he was telling the whole story at the beginning of the season. So they could just be like, hey, Angel, what about this time? And he would tell like a good old fashioned story, because he's an old man and old men love telling their stories. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, he could never learn of the chart.
Oh, yeah. He would be so mortified to know they had it.
So Darla's here. She is super pregnant. And then Cordy is no longer happy with Angel. In fact, she is mad at Angel. And she's like, hey, is this true? Did you fuck? And he is being a real fuck boy here when he says, vampires can't have children. And she's like, that's not what I asked you.
Yeah, Jesus, Angel. Very season two Angel of him to be such a dick.
Fred suggests this is possibly the bad thing. Darla's like, what did you do to me? Punches him. Mm-hmm. And Cordy's defending her because Angel.
Yeah, I mean.
You got her pregnant.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing, I love that. And I love the kind of like Cordelia and Darla dynamic in this episode. This idea that Cordelia is someone who has like intense compassion for Darla and for her situation and for just how like vulnerable and afraid she is, because what the fuck, like normal pregnancy is terrifying in my opinion. There's a little person inside you. Like, they made the Alien movies because the idea of pregnancy is scary. Like, that's a little chest burster inside you that you will, you know, hopefully grow to love. But it's terrifying. And poor, like, Darla, this is not supposed to be happening to her. And it is. Like, I just can't imagine how terrifying that would be. And I appreciate that Cordelia instantly knows and understands that.
Meanwhile, Angel is suggesting it's a hysterical pregnancy. He's being a real Liam, honestly.
Yeah, like, what? Because truly, like, what does she have to gain by being friends? Like, I mean, I guess...
How do you know it's mine, basically, is what he wants to ask.
Truly, like, I'm not impressed with Angel here. He's not being a very good dude or a very good, male ally.
And then he gets, like, full dummy and tells Wes to, like, look into his books for it. Wes, you read. And Wesley opens his book and says, I have absolutely no idea what's going on. And they're still calling Lorne the host, by the way. At this point,
he's Lorne. Yeah. Like, you don't have to give him a title.
Yeah. Lorne is back to work on Caritas. Mm-hmm. The Furies are there working their mojo. Mm. We got Arnie, the demon worker, who can, I guess, play back what people have said. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's a cool power to have, I guess.
That's a fun power.
That's good for identity fraud.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, that's really good if he wants to, you know, make some cool prank phone calls. Is your refrigerator running? But yeah, I loved seeing the Angel girls. Lovely to have them back. Lovely to have the way Angel is around them back.
Is it lovely to hear Cordelia call them chippies? What the fuck's a chippy?
I don't know. And I didn't care for it. I will say I did care deeply for Darla grabbing Lorne by the collars and screaming Danny boy at him.
And you guys didn't want Angel to sing. This isn't much better.
I fucking loved it. But yeah, Cordelia is real over it with Angel in this scene.
I mean, Angel's not making it any better by just making clear how much stamina he has. Just once, just the one night, just the two or three one times that one night. Jesus!
I mean, congrats to the both of you. But yeah, yikes. Maybe keep those details to yourself, pal.
Poor Buffy, unfortunately, didn't get to learn about Angel's stamina.
No, that was kind of just like a one-time experience. And then the sexy blood drinking, which I do kind of count as an additional sex scene for them.
You little freak.
That's me. There seems to be a belief that whatever is inside Darla is probably evil.
Yeah, Lauren apparently knows about the Troclaw, and he's like born out of darkness to bring darkness. Ooh. Yeah, Cordy's like, you guys are upsetting her. Let me take Darla away to Lauren's little bedroom. We get to see his bedroom in the bar. It's cool.
Yeah, it's nice. And I really like the Darla and Cordy scene. And Lauren is such a dang sweetie.
Basically, because, yeah, they're talking about how it's biologically impossible. And Lauren's like, yeah, it's mystically unfair, because if this thing is evil, like, what the hell?
Yeah, like, angels worked so hard to be a force for good in this world. Like, it is not fair that, like, the fates would saddle him with some kind of, like, evil, uncontrollable spawn.
Angel's like, I don't see how anything we could make could be something good. And they're talking about the Shang-Chi prophecy being a pivotal figure. And it's like, maybe, because, again, pivotal figure doesn't even mean, you know, good or bad. And that's kind of what Wolfram Hart is banking on, obviously, mm-hmm. with Angel. But, like, maybe the pivotal figure is this this baby.
Yeah.
And he's to bring it into the world or stop it. And then this is where Fred goes on about destiny and things being inevitable or evitable, if you will.
Screw destiny. If this evil thing comes, we'll fight it. And we'll keep fighting it until we whoop it. Because destiny is just another word for inevitable, and nothing's inevitable as long as you stand up, look it in the eye, and say, you're inevitable.
She's so cute, and Lorne agrees. He is just, like, looking at her with heart eyes, and I'm just so, so happy.
It's like the dating game, and it's the suitors are Gunn, Wesley, and Lorne. All vying for Fred's heart.
Who will be lucky enough?
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX. There's so many ways to watch movies these days. Your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Yeah, Angel wants to know how Cordelia is doing. He doesn't really give a shit how Darla's doing. Mm-hmm. And how Darla is doing is, you know, not great. Cordy's bonding with her because she brings up expecting and the whole Ken Marino baby situation. So that's besides the fact that she's mad at Angel. Like, this is, she has that experience, even though it was like a 24-hour thing. It still happened to her.
Yeah, I mean, she still felt all of like the fear and the vulnerability of not only like pregnancy, but magical pregnancy that's kind of unexplained. So I do think it's nice, and I do like the idea. I also want to say that, like, Angel, has these two women in his life that I do think he's very much like forcing into these like black and white roles. The idea that like Cordelia is good and she supports me and like she agrees with me on everything, whereas Darla is bad and my enemy. And like I, you know, had bad, evil sex with her, making a bad, evil baby. And whereas Cordelia is everything that is good. And when the truth is that these two women are more like murky and complicated than he's allowing them to be, and that they can agree on things and that they can share things together, I think is really exciting and is what makes the scene cool. But unfortunately, they do not get to bond for long.
Darla says that no matter how much she feeds, she just can't seem to get full, which that's unfortunate. And Courtney's like, oh yeah, this is still a vampire. I should get going. But Darla was like, I'm still a vampire. I can just kind of zoop over to you. Cordy gets her with those punches and she busts out a cross. And you know what? Vamps always push out the crosses out of the way. So like, let's stop with the crosses, people. Unless they're like around your neck. Don't hold the cross. They're just going to knock it out of your hands.
Yeah. You got to like, or you have to like press the cross into their skin and make them burn and make it hurt them. Like, cause just
it's not a force field. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe some vampire mythology has it where it's like it's kind of like a force field, but that's not the case here.
Yeah, I know there's Michael is into this sci-fi book that has like sci-fi vampires where they are messed up by the cross only because it is an unnatural right angle and it like sends their brain into disarray upon the sight of it. But that is not the case here.
It's not. But yeah, even though she puts up a good fight, Darla gets her with a big old chomp. And during this big old chomp, Cordelia has a vision. So that's double ouchies, basically. Double the pain.
Yeah. Poor, poor Cordy. No, thank you. But eventually Angel does come and save her from Darla, which is nice.
He tosses this very pregnant Darla.
I do love more than anything Gunn saying like, well, we tried to stop her by hitting her fists and feet with our faces, but it didn't I was like, Gunn, this is serious, not time for quips, although I love them.
But yeah, so Angel carries Cordy and they go back to the hotel. He leaves her in a suite with Gunn behind to keep watch. Mm-hmm. Although I know it's nice to have her like at home base, but like, why not take her to her home? Because Darla can't get in if you want to keep her safe.
Yeah, and Dennis would take care of her.
He would.
Yeah, he'd get her a nice bubble bath going and put on some trashy TV. It'd be great. But yeah. It is really sad because Cordelia is very much like blaming herself in this scene and like, you know, kind of like blaming her compassion and, you know, feeling like she let her guard down with Darla. But it's the right thing to be vulnerable and try to lead with kindness. I love you, girl.
I do appreciate it, I guess, even though Angel's being been a doofus. I like that he says he's like, I'm not going to keep telling you how sorry I am, because obviously he knows that she should know. She was mad at him, but like she knows how sorry he is. So he's just like, she's never going to do it again. I'll make sure of that. Mm-hmm. And she remembers to tell him about her vision, which is that it was like, she's like, it's like no vision I've ever had before. She could like feel how hungry she was and she doesn't know how to make the hunger stop.
Right. Which is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah. So Wes is trying to tell Angel not to do this alone because Darla's even stronger. But you know, Angel goes off and Wes is like, why does he think he has to do everything alone? It's like, aw.
Yeah. And doesn't Fred give some like powerful insights about Angel as a person? And I'm like, dang, girl.
She says, I think he just can't bear to have us see him do it because like he's going to kill the woman who has like the one thing he couldn't have, which is his child. Basically, that's the plan.
Yeah. Because again, he's put, I feel like he's like externalized all of this evil onto Darla in this way where like she's like the worst parts of me. Anything we did together could only be bad, like and all of this. And it like that's a coping mechanism, you know, like that's a way to continue to go about his mission. But it's really sad. And it's great. It's a beautiful like lesson to him that he ends up being wrong. But we can get into that as we move forward.
Yeah, as we move forward to the Chuck E. Cheese from hell. I know that might be like redundant, but you know.
Charles Entertainment Cheese, please.
Charles Entertainment Cheddar, really. But yeah, this kid has lost his mom, which this chaos, that's, he should have known to just like go to the front desk or something, but whatever.
Yeah.
Come on, kid. But yeah, Darla decides to be a good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
And so Cordy wakes from like her from a dream slash vision. And it's like about what's inside Darla.
Darla has this moment with the kid where like a mom's like, you're brave taking him all on your own. And she's like, I love kids. I could just eat him up. And I'm like, all right, Hannibal. So then Darla shows her terrifying vampire face to this child.
this child, he could scream. He could fucking belt.
Yeah, this kid is very scared and good on him. That's self-preservation. Luckily, Angel shows up and attacks this woman.
So meanwhile, Team Angel, they're still having fun with translations. But one thing I really want to note is that in the scene, Cordio says that her vision told her why Darla's craving younger victims, which isn't something that was established actually in the episode. Which were you confused, or did you even like notice that?
I remember being like, did she say it was about like purity and like blood?
Well, that's what Angel says eventually. Yeah. But here's the reason why, like, it's like, wait, she's craving younger victims. Footage not found is because so it's actually in the original script. It's only just like literally they removed a single bit from the whole line. So in this episode, you say, is as Cordelia saying, it was like no vision I ever had before. She's so hungry. She doesn't know how to make the hunger stop. In the original script, it was like, it wasn't like any vision I'd have ever had before. The innocence, she's so hungry.
Oh.
And that, yeah, that's originally in the script. I don't know why for some reason they cut that out.
Huh.
But that explains like, because otherwise you're like, wait, she's craving younger victims? Like, I
so she's
wouldn't have known.
Yeah, she's particularly hungry for innocent blood. Yeah. Okay, wow. Yikes.
Which, we don't know that that was something that she was, like, escalating to.
Yeah, no one on the bus seemed particularly, like, young or innocent. So, yeah, I guess they kind of backfill it a little bit, but it's odd. But it didn't bother me too much because there were so many other things going on. But, you know,
yeah,
that'd be clear.
But yeah, Angel and Darla are fighting, and I love that everyone cleared out. Good for them.
Smart on them, because like they're fighting on the like McDonald's play place plastic jungle gym slide thingy. And I did I've never seen a fight on one of those before. So when they flew up on the netting and grabbed it, I was having a great time.
If this was a New York vampire show, maybe they wouldn't have like left when they saw these vampire faces. But LA, they got the fuck out.
Yeah, no one in LA has any time for that shit.
The second they saw a vampire face, they're like, nope, 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 nope.
I am leaving. I am going. Like these people paid for parking to be here. And they're like, this is bullshit. Like, if you leave, then you won't have to pay as much. And that's the LA mentality.
Yeah, so they're fighting, and she calls him the good guy who did this to me, which honestly, is this just like just a normal pregnancy, or is this vampire pregnancy? Who can tell?
Yeah, and I mean, and it's also like there's like so much baggage between the two of them beyond that, because I mean, like, she was like brought back to life to get at him specifically and all of this stuff. Like, what he has done to her is a pretty fucking long list, so I appreciate the venom there and the idea that like all of their scenes, they're both such skilled actors that they do really bring their like full history to every single one of them. Like, these do feel like people who've known each other in so many different iterations for a really long time. So like that line has a ton of weight for me, and I like it.
I do have to criticize her saying that he can't strangle her because she's a vampire, because we know that you can strangle a vampire apparently because of Becoming Part Two, because Spike chokes Drusilla out.
Mm-hmm.
That's canon, baby.
Yeah, we're playing fast and loose with those rules.
But yeah, so fight, fight, fight. And then Angel hears the baby's heartbeat. So he doesn't kill her because that baby has a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants him to kill her because, you know, she's bad. She's evil. You know, everything Faith said when she wanted Angel to kill her.
I know. I was her. Like, hello, Faith.
But yeah, but it's but she has a baby in her also. And he's like, it has a soul. And she's like, I don't want a human baby with a soul. No, thank you.
Yeah.
She didn't want him with a soul, and he's still a vampire. So why would she want a human baby with a soul? No, thank you at all.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love it. Very, very Juno of him. He finds out his baby has fingernails, and he doesn't look back. And it's like the way he holds her and like kind of like reassures her as she falls apart. And, you know, she's saying she's bad and she doesn't want it. Like, it is kind of like a really it's a very poignant moment. Like, there's a lot going on there, because obviously, like, for Darla, this is like an unwanted pregnancy, and that's like pretty horrifying. And Angel's like, well, I want the baby. So, which, you know, I mean, like, the optics of that maybe are less than ideal. But also there's the fact that I don't think they would know how to get rid of this baby at this point, now that we're this deep in.
She tried already and failed. But yeah, I still don't get the craving pure and pure blood, but I do get the baby soul is kind of driving her crazy part. That makes sense.
That I love. The idea that, like, they inadvertently, like, created this thing together. Like, that they're... I mean, and this is talking, like, bigger things for the season, but the idea that, like, if together they've created something with a soul, something with the potential to be positive and good in this world, that that can kind of justify their existence in a weird way and can kind of, you know, maybe make their lives like more worthwhile is cool to me and interesting and complicated, which is what I like about Angel, is how it feels so much more adult than Buffy could. This is not a story they would have done. Like, I love all the coming of age stories that Buffy like handles and tells, and it talks about so many things about early life and meant so much to me in my early life and still does. But it is really exciting to be watching Angel now that I feel like I'm a little bit more of a grown-up. Even though
you're a grown-up living in LA, this is a perfect show for you.
Can you believe it? I don't believe that I'm a grown-up living in LA, but I guess I by definition am. Thank you very much for inviting me on at the absolute perfect time for me to be watching Angel, and really like kind of getting it for the first time, because this hit really hard.
It's good. Season 3 slaps, baby.
Yeah, baby.
I'm just going to say it because I've decided we're going to have a feud with the buffering gals.
Oh, no.
Even though we're on the same feed. You know what? I think we're having more fun this season. I'm just going to say it.
Look, more fun than season 6 of Buffy?
Yeah, suckers.
Notoriously the funnest season of Buffy.
The feud is on in 2021.
Yeah, feud : Jenny and Kristen and LaToya and Morgan. Wait till Ryan Murphy gets his hands on this.
To all of our Scoobies, please cast this season of Ryan Murphy's feud for us. Please cast us as Ryan Murphy alum.
Please. Actually, yeah, honestly, there's nothing more that I want than that. So please do that.
But back at the hotel, Angel is giving Darla some pig's blood. And she's like, this is shit. And she throws it at the wall, as every vampire does when Angel's like, here, have some pig's blood.
Truly the worst host on earth. This is where Darla asks how Cordelia is.
That hot bitch.
What a bitch. How's Cordy? Like, so fucking menacing.
I love that come the series Angel, everyone just decided that we all know that her nickname's Cordy.
I love it. It's so cute.
I believe literally she was maybe called Cordy twice in Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually maybe even just once. I think Buffy called her Cordy, and I think usually like Xander would like call her Cor, but I don't think anything.
I think he called her Cordy. I can hear Cordy in Nicholas Brendan's voice in my ear, which makes me believe that it happened, but I could have invented that.
Angel has his gun keeping watch again, this time on Darla, and this is to keep her away from Cordy and Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Angel reminds Cordy and Fred to stay away from Darla, and they're like, no duh.
Yeah, and it's interesting that like Angel has made these decisions that like, you know, he believes like Darla is someone worth like saving and that this baby is worth having. And he's made that complete change, but he still draws the line where he's like, gun, if she's, you know, moving, you take care of it. Like that the idea that like he still is protecting his, like his family, you know, Team Angel above all. I like to see that, but that is what I like to see.
Now that Cordelia has, you know, been through this, she's been able to process. She is actually like kind of happy for Angel that he's going to be a father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice look on the two of them that they can kind of like accept each other after having this big difference of opinion.
difference of opinion, the opinion that you told me that you didn't fuck her, but you did.
It's like, it's less of a difference than opinion, more that Angel was being a dick and being dumb, and now he has come around to feeling bad about being a dick and being dumb, and now he and Cordier are yet again on the same page.
Chirumption.
Oh, that's what Chirumption will do.
But yeah, it's another big fun day at Angel Investigations. Honestly, Wesley is trying to be like, this baby could be the prophecy thing, and Angel's like, you know what, it's my kid, shut up, Wesley.
Yeah, like, it could be evil, but it's mine. Like, and that's, you know, like, that's a big deal. Like, he is claiming this child and, you know, being responsible, and that's like, I don't know, that's just such a, he didn't even know he was a dad like 12 hours ago. Wild.
And now Fred's uh-ohing because another fun translation arrived / to come to land, and the thing is arriving now underground.
Dun, dun, dun.
A demon we've never seen before is awakening something or someone. And he's like, arise! And in true Buffyverse fashion, he says arise one last time, and then he like waits multiple beats for the thing to actually arise.
Yeah.
And he's like smoking a ciggy, mm-hmm. waiting for it. I'm just like, these prophecies, man. And then we get some lights and sounds.
Statue opens its eyes.
You know when statues be opening their eyes?
That's when you know the real shit's going down.
And it shatters. And then, welcome to the 21st century. It's Holt, ready to kill Angelus.
Oh, no.
And now, it's time for Fuck Watch.
Fuck Watch. So yours is Holt's 100%, right?
No. My Fuck Watch is actually the inattentive mom who let her child run away. And then when the child is found, she's like, where were you? Like, not worried at all that her child was missing in this chaos and like this den of like child predators.
And may I ask why?
I mean, you know what? She seems like she doesn't give a fuck about her child, and that could be hot. It means when I'm coming around, I don't have to worry about her dumb kid because the kid's not there.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Okay. Okay. Respect.
We're never going to see her again, so I can choose her.
Respect, respect. I'm going to choose Darla's hot henchwomen with their like flaming arrows and their like cool period dresses with like long skirts and shit kicking ass. That is my deal. That is what's up. More.
So you knew from like scene 1 what you wanted?
It's more like looking back, I'm like, what got me the most excited? And I'm like, those fucking like Crimson Peak looking girls like beating the shit out of people. Like that's all I could ever ask for.
And they were willing to die for Darla.
Which, same, so we have that in common.
Fuck Watch.
But yeah, Holtz is here. He's ready to kill Angelus. And, you know, like, the demon's like, you know, you haven't used your limbs in centuries. It could be a while. He's like, I'm ready to kill Angelus now. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, this guy is nothing if not, like, really, really focused on his goals. So, again, as always, as I said before, I admire the hustle, if nothing else.
I think it is time to suggest a classic episode from the WB Vault for Angel to watch this episode because... God, he really needs it this episode. Hit the music.
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They got that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see.
Thanks for hitting the music. So the episode I'm going to suggest is actually from a show called Smallville. Heard of it?
Wait, you're recommending a Smallville episode? I didn't even know you liked that show.
What? Somehow I've not recommended Smallville yet, and I double checked.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so the episode I am going to suggest is Ageless, which is Smallville episode of season 4, episode 20, you know, 420, blaze it, written and directed by Stephen S. DeKnight, who would go on, I believe, to start writing on Angel in season 4, actually.
Hell yes.
This is also known as the exploding baby episode. Clark and Lana discover an abandoned baby and take him back to the Kent farm. However, when the baby, Evan, ages from a newborn to a 7-year-old in less than a day, it becomes clear he is aging at a rapid rate, and they turn to Lex for help. And you know what? This kid just keeps growing, and he keeps growing. But you know what happens at the end of that? He goes boom.
Oof.
And you know, maybe Angel should watch this episode to learn how to be a better dad, because it seems that dumbass Clark Kent was a better dad in these few hours than Angel already is now when Darla comes here and says, "You're a dad." Learn to take responsibility, because this 17-year-old boy did when he found a baby just in the street or wherever they found the baby. And you know what? He was really sad when it exploded. He never addressed it ever again, but he was really sad when it exploded.
Aw. R.I.P. Splodin' baby.
Usually I would not suggest going to Clark Kent or Lana Lang for advice on things, except for how to be a big dumb alien or how to whisper that your boyfriend should tell you his secrets. But in this case, I think they took care of that baby as well as they could for, you know, teenagers, as opposed to this 240-something-year-old man who, at the sight of a baby mama, he's like, "It's not mine. I'm going to kill you. It was just the one time." So, yeah.
Yeah, not Angel. Ideal, buddy.
Somebody save you, Angel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's plugs time, I believe.
Yes.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at AngelOnTopCast. Email us at AngelOnTopPodcast@gmail.com. Go to AngelOnTop.com immediately, which will direct you to our Patreon, which is going to be popping soon because of Morgan Lutich over here.
Yeah, baby. Some exciting things coming in that space, so please stay tuned as I learn how to use it and create content for it.
Yeah, you can all thank Morgan. Miss Lutich, if you're nasty.
And you may be.
And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at LaFergs, and from there, you can find out what I'm up to.
It's usually pretty cool. You can follow me on Twitter at Lorgan Mudich, Instagram on the same handle, and any other platform you might be interested in following me on. I always use that username. And you can listen to the two of us as well as our good friend Jill on the Ampire Diaries podcast, which actually has a new Patreon you can subscribe to if you're interested.
Become patrons on all of our platforms now, immediately. Follow us on social media. Do it. Let us consume your lives. Get rid of all of your other hobbies. Pledge loyalty to us in the war against Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Feud, colon, Kristen and Jenny and Latoya and Morgan.
Get it made. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
We love you.
Love you.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.